Yesterday, Rabbi sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I.
Well, thank you, Bob Marley, and thanks to all of you tuning in today. This is Radio Free Canada again. I'm your host, Kevin Annett, and we're back as always, itccs.org. Follow the work every Sunday here at 3 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. And I am very honored and pleased to have with me today as my guest, Judy Byington, who is a retired therapist and counselor with Cult Ritual Abuse Survivors in America. She's based in the Western States. She's going to be talking to us today about her experience in not just treating victims of satanic ritual crimes, but actually helping to track down where these satanic cults operate from and the backlash that she's experienced for doing so. Very similar to other counselors like our friend Sandra Fecht in Canada, who's faced the same attacks. Now, this is happening today, of course, in the wake of great news coming out of Europe. For the first time in history, satanic cult members of the Ninth Circle have been arrested and stopped. We have saved the lives of 8 children in France, in Holland, and Switzerland. I'm going to sum up that report today that was just received from our tribunal office in Europe this last week. It came out May 5th on Friday. And then around quarter after the hour, we'll have Judy come on. Also, I wanted to urge people to follow up on what you learned today. Write republicofkanat@gmail.com. Volunteer for our volunteer sheriff training programs in the common law. We're going to have a little report at the end of the hour about next week's show involving our group in Toronto that's actually accrediting themselves as common law sheriffs, and they're going to be leading direct action campaigns in their community. I'll be mentioning that at the end. So we can do something, and we will. This is the purpose of the show today, to educate and to mobilize. Well, if you read itccs.org, you'll see in the latest posting this notice that came out, and I wanted, for those who haven't read it, I urge you to go to it because a lot of the details are in there. For background, the Ninth Circle is a satanic cult that was exposed over the last few years from several eyewitnesses in Holland who are former cult members or had been co-opted into it. Ninth Circle is at least 300 years old. It's run right out of the Vatican and involves top papal officials, including popes and cardinals. Now, the Ninth Circle we've been on the hunt for a number of years on the basis of having informants now coming forward. We were able to locate a number of cities where these attacks occurred, these cult ritual killings on April 30th of children. We broke up 3 of them in Wallis, Holland, in Dijon, France, and Lucerne, Switzerland. Our teams, assisted by local police for the first time, went in and arrested 19 cult members. We freed 8 children. 5 of those children were actually nationals from France or Holland. They were citizens, children who were 6 years old or under, being literally held in cages, and they'd been beaten and starved. 3 of the children were immigrants, either from Tunisia or Romania. All 8 were freed. They're now in the custody of either their families who they were returned to or independent safe houses until they can find proper families outside the system, because we know that the so-called child welfare system in many countries, including Europe and North America, they are the conduit of children into the Ninth Circle and other ritual abuse networks. The 19 cult members, as we speak, are still in the custody of police in those 3 countries, and the police were able to recover evidence of cult activity at the arrest sites, including satanic regalia, blood-stained torture devices, and children's clothing. And even in the case of Zwolle, Holland, the physical remains of dead and mutilated children were found in cold room containers. Now, the reason the remains are held, of course, is part of the Ninth Circle ritual is cannibalism, and those children's remains would be used in other rituals. All of that was photographed and videoed and by our team as well as the police. There were 2 separate records. And we also got several of the cult members to come forward and agree that they would turn evidence against others in the cult. So that's a very important step. It means their system is cracking apart. And the one thing people in those kind of secret society's fear is when their own members start coming forward and talking. And that's why this is such an important step on so many fronts. The important thing is those eight little children are alive tonight, thanks to the actions of the ITCCF team and the police who stood with them, which was another first. The bad news, of course, is that in the other cities, there was such protection that the teams couldn't penetrate it, or the rituals had been moved to other sites. These cities were Rome, London, Paris, Frankfurt, Brussels, and Geneva, as well as the Opus Dei Catholic Center in Tara, Ireland. Now, that tells you that traditionally these were important centers for the Ninth Circle cult. And adding on to that is what happened in North America, which was, I guess you could say, disastrous. In the three spots that we had targeted with our teams, in Washington, D.C., and Montreal and Vancouver, Canada, all of those teams were shut down by the police. They were arrested, and by plainclothes policemen, not by police, plainclothesmen who weren't identified and never identified themselves. Our people were held overnight. All of them have been released except one in Vancouver, and we're doing our best to find out where that person is. And what's interesting is one of our sources in the Ninth Circle have told us that the Circle have seriously been considering, and in fact are planning, to move their operations from Europe over to North America. Now, the fact that the North American actions by ITCCS were so quickly shut down suggests that, yes, they are very concerned about any action to expose the Ninth Circle in North America. And related to that is the fact that, and some very important news, is that two things. First of all, the very 2 days after these actions, the executive council of the ITCCS received a back-channel communication from a party claiming to represent an element within the Roman Catholic Curia, the so-called College of Cardinals. The party carried a message requesting a meeting between so-called influential officials at the Vatican and the ITCCS leadership. The executive said in response that they would meet, provided it occurred outside of Italy and was subject to monitoring and recording in the presence of their security staff and legal counsel. That was the ITCCS response, and they're still awaiting a reply. Related to that, another important development is the fact that we talked about the Ninth Circle moving to North America. Well, a possible, very probable location for the relocation from the Club Lorraine and a chateau in Belgium where they were previously based is the area between Montreal and Ottawa, Canada. And we know it's a heavy area in terms of satanic ritual killings, as well as MKUltra mind control programs run by the military. And there's a direct link between the military and these satanic ritual killings, which we'll talk about. But related to that is the fact that the top Catholic cardinal in Canada, Gerald Lacroix, was, according to our source near the Ninth Circle, was present at two Ninth Circle gatherings in Brussels and Rome this past March. Now, Gerald Lacroix was already named as participating in a Ninth Circle ritual on February 22nd, 2014, at the San Lorenzo Jesuit Church in Rome, along with Pope Francis Jorge Bergoglio and Danny LaBelle, who was a federal cabinet minister in the former government of Prime Minister Stephen Harper. Now, what's interesting is both Cardinal Lacroix, was appointed by a convicted criminal, deposed Pope Joseph Ratzinger, who as a young man was a member of the Knights of Darkness, SS satanic cult himself. So all of these, all of this indicates that, yes, not only is it active in Canada and there's a direct link to the Roman cults, but that could be a possible place where the Ninth Circle could be moving. Now, of course, in response, there's been a counterattack, not just on the counselors who are trying to legitimate the whole issue of satanic ritual crimes, but against our three field secretaries, including myself, and the field secretary for Europe and Australia. Apparently, all of us, again, have been targeted for disruption by the Holy Alliance, even for elimination, according to the source. And so we're all taking the necessary protective measures, but this is not something new. These threats have come down before. And it's only a sign, brothers and sisters, that we're having such a tremendous impact. That's the important update. And just related to that in the few minutes before we bring Judy on, is the fact that we have to remember that Satanism by itself is like genocide, is a tool of church and state and has been for many centuries. And we found, for example, and I wanted to flag this for future shows, one of the new developments in Europe is we're forming a common law court in Serbia to look into the Vatican-led genocide of the Serbs, the Jews, and the Gypsies in Croatia during the 1930s and 40s. A program like the Indian residential schools in Canada that was run directly out of the Vatican using Vatican personnel. These Catholic priests were running the death camps, forming the death squads. They killed almost 1 million people in the Jasenovac concentration camp. Well, clearly, satanic ritual killings were present in all of these death camps, and they're closely tied to the post-war satanic ritual killings, tied to the CIA, who brought over many of these Nazis through Project Paperclip. Because the basic purpose of many of these satanic ritual killings at an energetic level was to identify the energy patterns of human beings and capture them. The pattern of fear, of other things that could then literally be used as energy weapons. And this has been actually documented by former insiders, and we'll talk about that more as well. So that's some of the background to today. I want to bring on Judy now, Judy Byington, a former therapist speaking to us from Utah, and I'll bring her on now. Hello, Judy.
Hi, Kevin. It's good to hear you again.
It's really good to hear you, as always. And you know, I'm not sure how many of our listeners know about you, so why don't you give a little bit of a background, you know, your books and how you came into the whole field of you know, ritual abuse.
I had spent part of my life being a therapist, and I was a supervisor of mental health for Alberta Mental Health, and then I was over Family Counseling Center in Provo, Utah. I had a daughter who became quite ill, and I had to retire quite early. While I was a therapist, people would come in and say such things to me as, I can't remember my childhood, and what we know is disassociation. But at the time, I didn't recognize what was really going on. After I retired, cousins, grown women, came to me and wanted some help because one of their fathers was under arrest by the Utah Attorney General for rape of one of her sisters, one of the sisters. There were several women in the family that he actually raped throughout their lives, but they just were trying him for molest of one of the children. And they wanted, they had started to have repressed memories because of his arrest. And they hadn't seen, these were cousins, and they hadn't seen each other since childhood. And they ran into each other in a shopping mall one day and realized that they were having some of these same repressed memories. And so they came to me and asked me for my help, because they wanted him charged with more than just, you know, the molest of one child. So I spent about a year with them, and I worked with the Utah Attorney General Special Investigators for Ritual Abuse. And anyway, that's how I initially became involved. The trial actually went nowhere. We found out through a lot of investigation that this man was actually a satanic coven leader for all of Utah and all the way over west to Garden Grove, California, down to Arizona. And I had gone out with these women to different sites where they had claimed to have seen murders and had been raped by both of their fathers. And we gathered all this information. We actually connected up with 5 missing children here in Utah. And I took all this information back to the Utah AG office. The bottom line is they didn't use this in court, and the man got off on a quirk of the law. So I was very frustrated with this, so I started taking the information around to different legal entities, and I went, one of the persons I approached was an FBI agent. The same day I approached him, Jenny Hill approached him, and she had been ritually abused as a child and had been to a satanic ceremony where they murdered another little girl. And she was trying to find the parents of the little girl that was murdered. And so she approached this FBI agent asking for some help. The bottom line is he refused to open up a case for either one of us, but he did put us together. And then I spent about almost 20 years with Jenny and writing her biography. It's called 22 Faces Inside the Extraordinary Life of Jenny Hill and Her 22 Multiple Personalities. It was very interesting for me and quite an education for me to work with Jenny, because as a child, she was really confused about why she dissociated. That is, she would go from 1 minute to another or 1 hour to another and not remember what happened in between. And so she began writing journals, and she had kept these journals throughout childhood and adulthood, and then eventually she ended up in the Utah State Hospital, and they encouraged her to write in there. And as she would write in her journals, her alter personalities would take over, and they would write down very specific experiences of what happened to her. And so it was a great education for me to work with her and to read these journal writings and to write her book. But that's the bottom line of how I got involved in all this.
For people who are new to this whole topic, why do children split off into multiple personalities when they're undergoing such horrible trauma at a young age?
It's called dissociative identity disorder. It used to be called multiple personality disorder in the psychiatric manual, but there was an organization of actual ritual abuse therapists that were able to get that diagnosis changed to dissociative identity disorder. We all disassociate. Daydreaming is a perfect example. Often, you know, sometimes in meetings or in school, you know, I would get bored with what was going on and I would just start, you know, thinking in other directions. That's one end of the spectrum, is daydreaming. Kind of in the middle is post-traumatic stress disorder, and that's, you know, commonly found with veterans of war. My father, for instance, suffered from that because he was in World War II. He was a little farm boy from Idaho that was forced into the war and had to kill a man, and he had to go through some of the concentration camps after the Nazis left. In fact, he had a picture of Eisenhower and Patton together looking at a shed where all these bodies were stacked up, and he took this picture. But he came back from the war very, very dissociated, and he would have these flashbacks. All the flashbacks were the mind trying to heal from the trauma, trying to process, because when he had these traumatic experiences during the war, his mind handle it, so they repress the memories. And so anyway, that's post-traumatic stress. And then in the far end of the spectrum is multiple personality disorder. That only happens to children because it has to do with the developing brain of the child, and it only happens to a child who is undergoing prolonged trauma. Kind of think of your mind as a tree, and the trunk of that tree is your core personality, and the branches are different memories that you've developed. And out there, as you have a traumatic experience, you know, as you have a when you think or when you go through experiences, your brain creates little neurons, and they hook onto each other. Well, what happens with a traumatic experience that the mind doesn't want to, you know, handle? They will create the little neurons or the little thoughts out there, but they won't connect to the core personality. It's called a repressed memory. And those repressed memories will stay with that person for long periods of time until they get into a safe situation. So that's why some of these children who have gone through trauma, it can be 20, 30 years later when these repressed memories will come back. And that was what happened to these women that I was working with, is that they didn't have these memories until they saw certain things that reminded them of the experience, and then the memory would come back, and the mind, when it was in a safe situation, could then process that trauma.
Well, relating this back to the whole, your discovery of these satanic networks, I know reading the literature on MKUltra, the CIA mind control programs, they need children and create children in these dissociated states for experimental reasons, to create sleeper agents, to probe the human mind in that. So What I'm wondering, what you discovered with these satanic networks, is that same deliberate element there? Were they deliberately doing this to children, like showing them the murder of other children and that, to make them pliable, to make them members of the cult? How exactly does that work?
That's exactly how mind control works. In Jenny's case, she was raped by, she claims that she was raped by her father almost on a daily and at least a weekly basis all through childhood from the time she was very, very little. And I hear this a lot from ritual abuse survivors, is that rape during childhood is a common experience for them. And it's usually by somebody that's very close to them, and if it's a, you know, father figure, you know, it's even more traumatic. But that experience will then start to split those thinking patterns that they have into, you know, various patterns. For instance, I know of a ritual abuse survivor whose mother, when she was in the womb, they would give her the mother shock treatments, and that. She doesn't know how many personalities she has. So I have thousands of thought patterns because I began to split in the womb. But that's what they do, is they give these traumatic experiences to these children at a very young age and on a very regular basis, where the child knows that they cannot get out of the situation and they just have to deal with it, you know, on a minute-to-minute basis in order to live life.
Right.
Well, once that child has started to, you know, to split, then it's much easier for mind control efforts to take place because they already have the different personalities forming in them. For instance, when they rape a child, they will name that personality that forms during the rape, you know, to handle the experience of that rape, and that name in mind control is Beta. And so anybody that realizes that this person is a multiple, they could call forth that personality just by naming the name, Beta.
Right.
It's Beta, uh-huh. Beta come forward. And then that personality will come forward, and that's how they control. That's the mind control that they do
right.
in order to, you know, control these little children
and
on through life, actually.
Now tell us some of your, of course, without naming the names of your patients and that, some of the experiences they had as victims of these satanic cults. How do these cults operate? Why do they get so much protection from police and authorities?
Well, and unfortunately, there's a lot of authorities that are into satanic worship. It's a power thing. They do it to gain power and prestige or whatever. And so when I was working with this, trying to get information on this satanic coven leader, I was very innocent to the fact that some of the people that I was actually talking to were actually coven, you know, people involved in the occult. And they will use their power and prestige to cover up the information. For instance,
right.
I worked with these two women for over a year, and we'd go out to different coven sites. We would connect up the murders and identify the victims. And I had all this information that I took back to the Utah Attorney General's office. They did absolutely nothing with it, even
right.
though they had the coven leader on trial, and these were ritual abuse investigators that had been hired specifically to do that. And it wasn't them that, you know, stopped this from coming into court. It was superiors over them. Stop
right.
it coming to court. So you have people in very powerful positions that are stopping this information from coming forward. I mean, you certainly know this, and
yep.
you never see stuff about this in the regular news media because there are powerful people in the occult that own the news media and prevent it from coming out.
Now, by you say the higher powers in Utah, that would be the state attorney general's office?
I found that there was a specific person at that time at the Utah Attorney General's office that was preventing this information from being taken to court, yes. And that was a realization that I came to after trying to work with them for several years. I did eventually start working with a man called Captain Hostler. He was over special investigations for the state. And Hostler actually called me into his office and asked me to start working with him. And he told me at that time, he said, nobody knows, except there was one other person, you know, over him that knew that, you know, I was working with him. But he says, nobody else knows about this, and they're not going to know all the time that we worked together, because they knew themselves that people, you know, were connected with the occult in their office. And that's the problem that you have, is that you don't know who's in the occult and who's not. You know, you have to be very careful about what you do.
You know, this is like the Serpico film where the one honest cop in Brooklyn couldn't find anyone to help him, right? And he got seriously attacked for being the one honest cop. And I want to eventually get to that, about the repercussions you faced. But I wanted to ask you first, can you name the name of this Satanist who was on trial? Or do you want to do that?
I don't think it would be wise to do that because of the victims and the things that I like to talk about.
Just checking.
Do you want me to tell you a little story about how these special investigators got hired?
Sure.
What happened in Utah I think it's happening all over the United States, it's just that people aren't taking notice, is that there were therapists who were realizing that there were a lot of ritual abuse victims coming to them and saying, you know, I have been abused throughout my childhood. I have seen murders. I have, you know, been raped and that. Nobody will believe me. I need help. I need therapy. And so we had a lot of therapists in Utah, you know, saying, what do we do with this? The American Psychiatric Association wouldn't recognize it. They didn't have any therapies, you know, to deal with it. And that's a whole other story having to do with MKUltra and all the CIA stuff. But there was an association that started called the International Society for the Study of Trauma and Disassociation. And they were a group of therapists. It's now, you know, hundreds of therapists now. It's a very good association, but they said, we need to get therapies going for this. And so they formed. While they were forming, they realized that there were just literally thousands of people across the United States that were, you know, being ritually abused. This same thing happened with the LDS Church Family Services Association. They have, you know, a counseling arm called LDS Services.
What's the LDS for listeners?
Oh, excuse me, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Okay.
And it's commonly called LDS or Mormons, and it's centered here in Utah. Well, they have offices all across the United States and in Mexico and Canada. And women were coming, mainly women, were coming to them and saying, you know, we've been ritually abused. At the time, President Benson, Ezra Taft Benson, was president of the church, and he used to be Secretary of Agriculture under Dwight D. Eisenhower. But he was president of the church at the time, and at the very same time that this was happening, he was getting reports from LDS Social Services about this. He grew up in a little town in Idaho, and in this little town, there was a ritual abuse case where a baby was found that had been half-burned and the organs missing and all that, and it's called the Baby X case. And that case came into the news, and it was a ritually abused baby. And so he had that information, and he had all this information coming from the different counselors. So he ordered a study to be done. And it's called the 1990 LDS Report on Ritual Abuse. And they spent an entire year, and they went out and interviewed a lot of ritual abuse survivors. And then Elder Glenn Pace, who was a hierarchy in the church, he was head of this committee, and he wrote up a report and sent it to President Benson. I have been given the only interview Elder Pace has ever given on this report. In this report, it was stated 45 members witnessed human sacrifice. And when a copy of this
LDS
report
members.
Got it. Excuse me?
45 LDS members witnessed.
Yeah, 45 members of the church have stated they have seen human sacrifice. And when that report got put on the internet, and when that hit the internet, they just had a barrage of, you know, calls coming into the church. And, of course, they wouldn't deal with that because they don't like to get into political stuff. But what they did was they put all this information together, And then they sent it over to the Utah Attorney. They had actually hired a genealogist who would trace the lineage of the perpetrators that were named, because this generally comes down in what they call multi-generational satanic families, where
right.
Generally the father will, you know, rift yep. to abuse, usually the oldest child, and sometimes the other children too, and then it just gets handed down generation to
right.
generation. So they were
yep.
tracing the generations to find all the perpetrators. So they trace all this stuff and hand it over to the Utah Attorney General. Well, at the same time they were doing the LDS report, they also did a second report on counselors and therapists and investigators and whatever in the state that were dealing with ritual abuse. And they did their own report. They put these two reports together and found a lot of the very same information.
Did the state ever act on it?
Yes. That's when they went to the state legislature. They got the money to hire these satanic ritual abuse investigators. These investigators were hired, and their very first arrest was this man that I ended up trying to investigate. And so we know that he was arrested because they knew that he had been involved in satanic ritual abuse. But
was
yet when they finally got the thing to court...
Did he do any time?
No. When they finally got it to court, they wouldn't put in any information about ritual abuse in the court. They only tried him for molest of one child, and he got off on a quirk of the law. So
did the judge
still
exclude
out
the evidence about satanic rituals?
Say that again. I'm sorry. I didn't.
Did the judge in that trial actually exclude evidence related to satanic rituals?
No, the Utah Attorney General's office wouldn't bring the evidence in. They refused to bring it in. That's what we were pushing them for an entire year to do, and they wouldn't bring it in.
All right. So in other words, that's how more blatant can you get, Judy? I mean, it's one thing I wanted to ask too. That's all very informative. You know, it kind of shows us the lay of the land. I know you couldn't mention the guy's name. Can you mention any of the sites in Utah that are covens that you suspect, like the towns, just for the safety of people?
Yeah, there are eight. This is what the special investigators told me, that there are eight satanic covens in Utah. There's one up in the Logan area. There's one in Ogden, I believe. There's two in Salt Lake. There's two in Utah County, and there's two in southern Utah. And when I was doing my investigations, these women who had been to these different satanic events, they'd go to a murder of a child about once a year, and they talked about specific areas in like Alpine, Utah, in Scipio, Utah was a big place. There's two different sites in Scipio. There's a house in town, and there's a farm outside of town where it's still owned by the coven, and they still have their little ceremonies there. That was some of the ones that I would try and stop. I'd know the specific date of when they were going to do this, and I'd just go down there and show up. And
right
when they would see somebody was watching them, then they would, you know, kind of break up the ceremony. But that was the only way I had of doing that.
Scipio, that's spelled S-C-I-P-I-O?
S-C-I-P-I-O, yeah.
In Utah. Now, tell us, I don't want to run out of time here and not mention, what's happened to you in the wake of that? I know you had been attacked by people publicly in that. Do you want to talk a little bit about the backlash you faced?
Yes, I was really surprised at the backlash. I shouldn't have been, but I was. When first my book came out, there was just kind of a normal reaction to it in that I would get it was put on Amazon, of course, and then I'd get, you know, really good reviews on it, and then I'd get a review every once in a while that was a one-star review that was very negative, and all the one-star reviews were kind of written all the same.
Small world. And then I decided
Jenny was a typical SRA survivor who was trying to get treatment, and the mental health does not have treatment for multiple personalities, and they would drug her up. And so I decided, oh, Dr. Phil would be a good show to put her on, and we could get her some treatment and get her evaluated and, you know, do whatever. So I wrote into the Dr. Phil show. I said, you know, I've written this book about Jenny Hill, and she's being drugged up, and I would really like to get her evaluated. And my goal was to get her down to Dr. Ross's clinic. Dr. Colin A. Ross was one of the... he's a psychiatrist, and he's probably a world-renowned expert on ritual abuse, and he wrote the foreword to my book, 22 Faces. He runs ritual abuse treatment centers in Texas and California and Michigan, and I wanted to get Jenny into his treatment because he specifically treats ritual abuse survivors, and he does an extremely good job. So that was my goal, to write Dr. Phil and say, hey, you know, could we get her down to Dr. Ross? So I did that, and we went through several months. They were interested, and they had me do an evaluation and send in social summaries on the family and everything and all the problems involved, and I did that. And then we got the call to be on his show. We go down there, and right before I start to walk on air, the producer comes and puts me aside and says, number one, Dr. Phil has not read your book. Number two, I have read the book, and I don't believe it. And number three, we're not going to give Jenny treatment.
Oh,
and
God.
Then they shoved me onto the stage.
Slam dunk.
And so when Jenny and I got through filming the show, and we spent down, you know, several days down there filming it, when we got through and on our way home, we both turned to each other and they said, what on earth were we there for? What did we do? Because the actual filming of the show, he didn't really, you know, do much of anything. I found out later that they cut and pasted and, you know, did all kinds of things to make me look like a manipulating therapist who was taking advantage of her clients. That was the purpose of the show, which was really upsetting to me because I was never Jenny's therapist. And yet they portrayed me as her therapist on
the why thing. Did they misrepresent you? What forces do you think were brought to bear on them?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's entertainment for one thing. I've also have not heard good things about Dr. Phil from ritual abuse survivors. And I can't say a lot about that, except there. I have on our website... we have two letters on there. They're called Open Letters to Dr. Phil. One is written by Jenny, one is written by me, and it gives a pretty detailed explanation of what actually happened and what we feel happened. Also, he has had, I know of three multiple personalities had on his show. One was Jenny, one was about a year before we went on, and one was about a year after we went on. All three have had very bad experiences.
What kind of experiences? You mean he's critical of them? What happens?
Well, one that was the year before we went on, she said that he told her he was going to get her evaluated by a psychiatrist. And, you know, she was a multiple, and she knew she was multiple, and she just wanted some help, just like Jenny. And he actually did send her to a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist says, you're not multiple. And then he turned around and made... this woman pay for her trip, you know, to get evaluated. And I don't know what happened to the other one a year later, because by then I was so mad at Phil, I couldn't stand to watch the program. But I heard that was a very bad experience for her also. And then right on our show, he said, I have never seen a multiple personality. Essentially, he was saying, I don't believe you. You know, she's not
multiple.
Oh, my
God.
And even though he'd had a multiple on his show the year before.
Yeah.
And so... you know, I have some real questions about him. But during when the show was aired, I had 50 one-star reviews come in within 3 days of it airing.
Right. Yep.
And all the one-star reviews were written like they were one or two sentences. They were kind of all written, but you could tell they were written by the same person.
Yeah.
But they were all under, you know, different emails and that.
Yeah.
And so there was a very big effort to make sure that my book did not get good ratings on Amazon.
One of my guests I had on a few weeks ago, Dave Staffan, was a survivor of these cult rituals, and he talked about how quickly you get targeted and smeared publicly. And the people doing it, of course, are actual cult members, and he named some of them. There is a fellow, I don't know if you want to mention his name, but you said to me, he's out of Oklahoma, he's a prominent Satanist, and...
His name is Douglas Masico, and that's his real name. He goes by Doug Mesner on the internet. He also goes by Lucian Graves, and under Lucian Graves, he calls himself head of the Satanic Temple. And he wrote an open letter to Dr. Phil before we went on the show and really, you know, put me down and degraded me and da-da-da through that whole thing. But he is very active in this whole situation. He wrote a coloring book for children that he got into the schools down in Florida that promotes Satanism. And he was the one that built the statue of Satan with a little girl sitting on Satan's lap that he tried to, down in Oklahoma, you know, they had the Ten Commandments at the courthouse. They were saying, you know, it's unfair to have the Ten Commandments there. You know, you have to have other religions, so we're going to put
religious freedom
statues. Yeah. And then there's another instance where he... something about a pastor and that he didn't like, and the pastor's wife passed away, and on her grave he went down there and took out his manly organ and had a picture of it on this statue there with two sexy women on either side, and it got published in some newspaper, I can't remember. Anyway, he's quite a character.
So here's the thing, Judy, like, how does this guy get to get comic books into the schools in Florida? I mean, you only do that if you've got the school board and local politicians on board.
Correct.
So what's this guy's reach? Why is he able to do that, do you think?
Well, I think he's paid by Soros. And I think he works with a group of people who their full-time job is to denigrate and try to put down anything that has to do with therapists dealing with ritual abuse or other people trying to deal with it.
Well, yeah, just like in Canada, they're going after anyone who's addressing this issue. But Soros, you mean George Soros?
George Soros,
billionaire.
Yeah. When I got all these negative comments on Amazon, and it wasn't just the negative reviews. I mean, they were writing thousands and thousands of negative comments. And if you go into Amazon and look under 22 Faces reviews and read some of those reviews, whether they're good reviews or bad reviews, they'll have just all these thousands of negative comments.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, how do people do all this? So I was trying to make a complaint to Amazon about everything that they were doing to me on there. And so I did a lot of research on it, and I found that they were very, very organized in certain areas, and one was on the East Coast and one was on the West Coast,
yeah,
where these emails were coming from. So
That's interesting. Just a side point on that, Judy. The same things happened to my books, especially Murder by Decree, my book about genocide in Canada that touches on a lot of the things we're talking about. I found the same thing. I did research. It was all coming from the East Coast. So what do you think that is?
Oh, I think it's Soros' organization. I think it's very well-paid people that are doing this.
Why do you say George Soros? Because he has been named as a participant in the Ninth Circle by several eyewitnesses. But why are you saying him?
Because when I researched this organizations that were doing this to me, I found that they were owned by George Soros.
Really? Well, yeah, it's interesting. He runs Human Rights Watch as well. Like, he's got all these front human rights groups.
Mm-hmm.
Let's step back for a minute and just look at all this. Well, what do you think is the way, what can ordinary people do to fight this? I mean, what's your vision on this in our last...
Well, my emphasis is to save the children, and what you have done is just really a breakthrough to be able to actually find children who are being ritually abused and save them from it. But I think being able to recognize a ritually abused child and then doing whatever is necessary to try and protect that child is very, very important. And disassociation, and I think you get a good feel of what a dissociated child acts like if you read 22 Faces. It's on 22faces.com on the internet.
You have to write the number
because,
22.
Because I take her as a young child, and she's dealing with all these alter personalities, and she jumps from one event to the next. And even her teacher, who is really trying to help her, doesn't recognize, you know, that this is an abused child. So even if it's not a ritually abused child, just an abused child, to be able to recognize that they are going through abuse and then, you know, follow through and try to get them out of that situation.
Right.
Unfortunately, these ritually abused children are being abused in their own homes by their parents, and parents can be very, very good at covering it up.
Well, you know, Judy,
I will tell you that these women that I worked with way back then, the wife of that coven leader, didn't have a clue that he was involved in the occult, and they were married, I think, for 23, 25 years. Very intelligent, very beautiful, very wonderful woman. And so they are just so cunning that they can do this right in front of everybody, and people don't realize what's going on.
Well, the disbelief factor helps them a lot, but like you say, there's lots of protection behind this. You know, we've got about 3-4 minutes left before I have to do the sign-off, but tell me, just and listeners, contact information, websites. I think you spelled 22, is it the number 22, not writing out 22, right?
The number is 22faces.com. And I also have another website called childabuserecovery.com, and that has a lot of information on it, including the articles that I've written for the ITCCS and, you know, the different organizations. There's a lot of different organizations trying to help the ritually abused, and one is this International Society for the Study of Trauma and Dissociation. They're very good therapists there, and they are very dedicated to try to help people.
Okay, that's the International
Society. Our mental health is completely on the other side as far as I'm concerned.
The American Psychiatric Association. They're all lined up against any of this. Okay. Could you name the name of that society again, the International?
The International Society for the Study of Trauma and Disassociation, ISSTD.
Okay. I get constant calls from people. It's really gone through the roof, the number of people wanting to volunteer to go in and stop these rituals to save children. And they need this information and knowledge. You know, forewarned is forearmed. So what you're doing is invaluable, Judy. And I know we'll have you on again as things develop. Any final words for the listeners?
Yes, just recognize that this is going on. This denial is the biggest problem we have, and I even denied it, you know, way back then. There was, when I got so discouraged with not being able to get this information, you know, into trial, I literally put all my information underneath the staircase and left it there for a couple of years because I couldn't deal with it because it was so hard because nobody believed anything that you were doing. But I think if you can just confront the fact that it is going on, that children are being abused, and we need to recognize who they are and try to do whatever we can to save them, is the biggest factor that we can deal with.
Well, thank you. God bless, Judy. It's been a wonderful show and interview. We'll have you back on, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you. I'd love to come back, and I sure appreciate everything you're doing, Kevin. I think you're just a fantastic person to do what you're doing.
Okay, well, we do it together. Thank you, sister. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye.
Judy Byington, please get her book, 22 Faces, at Amazon, and put in a positive review. And for our book, murderbydecree.com, for that matter. In closing, let me just remind you that next week, as an example of what to do, we're going to have our team from Toronto, two folks come on, describing how they're being trained as Carmelite sheriffs, the campaign they're going to use to fight evictions among the poor of Toronto using direct action and common law warrants. And we'll get into that next week with our two friends from Toronto. Please tune in for that. It's an example of what to do, not just hearing about the problem, but putting it into action. Those direct action teams can be used in any way, including making citizen arrests of known child killers in the Catholic Church or outside it. and also stopping these satanic crimes. So please write to us, republicofkanata@gmail.com. Go to itccs.org, murderbydecree.com. And a final note that one of the things that we continue to flag to people is this is a multinational program. We are working with people all over Europe now, especially in Eastern Europe where there's a new front opening up. Asia, Australia, we've got a group forming in India because these problems and who we're up against is global. And in the course of this work, there's a change coming. We are learning a higher consciousness, a recognition that we're moving into a new era where human beings are being freed from this matrix that has fed off us for many thousands of years. So it's a great and glorious time to be alive, folks. Do not lose hope. You're not alone. Write to us. Reach out. republicofkanata@gmail.com. And tune in next week. There'll be a lot more to talk about. So until next week, brothers and sisters, stay strong and stay clear. This is Kevin Annett. Bye for now.
Well, you know, Johnny always wore black, and he wore black because he identified with the poor and the downtrodden.
You can run on for